We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. They make suits, shirts, coats, and more, and everything is made to your exact measurements for a great fit. Plus, you get to personalize all the details, including your lapel, lining, and your own monogram. Indochino's process is simple. Choose your fabric, pick your customizations, and submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom, or do it all yourself online at Indochino.com. Right now, you can get $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Blue Wire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Blue Wire for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. Incredible deal for made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit. Welcome to the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show brought to you by Indochino, Roman, and Harry's. I'm Blair Andrews on Twitter at AmITheRealBlair, and my co-host is Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010. Hassan, how's it going?
It's going fantastic, Blair. You know how it does. There was football play today, and it was another wild, wild day. And here we are with Kyle Rudolph catching his second touchdown of the night, two receptions, 2 yards, two touchdowns, a.k.a. the best receiving line for a tight end.
Yeah, that's the kind of week it's going to be, I guess. Well, I'm excited to discuss some of the news and especially excited to discuss it with our guest today. Joining us on the show is Michael Dubner. Michael is a featured writer at RotoViz and places his emphasis on DFS and the draft best ball leagues. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael_Dubner. Michael, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? It's good to be back on the RotoViz report again. However, I can't believe we're about to rehash this week 10 as it went so bad for my DFS teams this week.
Hopefully we can start off on a positive note with our first news item. Christian Kirk caught 6 of 10 targets for 138 yards and 3 touchdowns in the Cardinals' week 10 loss to the Bucks. So Michael Kirk broke out in a big way today, posting his first 100-yard game since week 2. And it was also the first time all season that he scored a touchdown. So what are your expectations for Kirk going forward?
Yeah, I mean, myself, along with pretty much everyone at RotoViz, I think was higher than the market on Kirk this offseason. So I don't think it'll come as a surprise that I'm optimistic about Kirk the rest of the season. Kirk was actually one of the few things that went well for me today on FanDuel, as I had him in cash and also 40% of my GPP lineups this week. However, I know a lot of the people in the industry has really talked about how DFS has gotten a lot sharper over the past few years, especially this year. And I think that Kirk being 65% owned in cash and 30% owned in GPPs really exemplifies that. But yeah, anyway, about Kirk for the rest of the season, he's seen 8 targets in 5 of 7 games now. So I think that we can really project him for a weekly median expectation of about 5 receptions for 6 yards, which I think is really encouraging. But he doesn't really profile as a touchdown scorer. So I wouldn't be like, I would be open to trading him high if someone wants to buy him. However, I do think Kirk is more of like a wide receiver 2-3 moving forward. So I'd be very happy starting him.
Yeah, that's actually a good point because you are the second guest who's made that exact same observation. The other one was Tyler Lochner a few weeks ago. And you know, just to bring that home, we've got Arizona who are going to be entering a pretty rough stretch here going forward. They've got San Francisco next week, then a bye, and then they got, you know, the Rams, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland and Seattle. None of these are easy games by any stretch, especially, you know, San Fran, and then followed by the Rams and Pittsburgh, especially Pittsburgh, because they've come on pretty strong. Out of curiosity, are there any trades that you'd be looking to finagle trying to sell Kirk High here?
I mean, no one really comes to mind specifically. I think it's always hard to do, you know, these one-for-one deals, so it would be more of a package deal, maybe a two-for-two or something, where you try to sell Kirk. I mean, he is like, he's only 53rd in the league in air yards. So yes, I'm definitely willing to trade him. But again, he's not someone I'm actively trying to trade away, and I would be very fine keeping him.
Yeah, one of the other things that really I wanted to talk about is a little bit about in this game was ever since they acquired Kenny and Drake. I mean, not ever since because it was just fairly recent, but today was a pretty stark, you know, split between Drake and David Johnson. Drake saw, you know, 10 carries. He rushed for 35 yards. David Johnson only had 5 carries. He rushed for 2. And then there's also a pretty big split in the receiving game. David Johnson had the one target, one reception for 8 yards, whereas Drake had 7 targets. He got 6 for, you know, for, he got all 6 for 6 yards. Do you think this is more like, you know, just residual David Johnson just not being healthy anymore, or is this more of a longer term, you know, kind of an issue? Because you know, David Johnson is kind of underperforming his expectations, his preseason expectation, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the injury probably, you know, it has something to do with it, but I do think that this is really concerning because we did have that original red flag of the Cardinals actually trading for another running back, and now we actually have real evidence that there will be a backfield split moving forward, and this is even before Chase Edmonds returns. I think David Johnson was not effective as a runner earlier, but I thought that we could maybe at least bank on his pass catching ability as a receiving floor because he was 8th in targets. But now that Kenyon Drake is seeing 7 targets in this game, even with David Johnson active, I do think that is a concern for him moving forward. And I don't really know if we can trust David Johnson until we really see it from him again.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we've seen, I guess this is now the second week in a row that he's been active, but has actually, you know, basically should have been on the injury report or something, something we should have known about. So we know that Kingsbury's not real, revealing with that stuff, it seems. Assuming that Johnson is not playing at 100% and he's dealing with some kind of injury, do you think, I guess, how this situation unfolding, how does it make you value him more long term, like for Dynasty or for redraft next season?
Man, I mean, I don't play much Dynasty, so I'm probably not the best person to ask for that, but obviously I can still think about his value long-term. I would still be – do you guys know Drake's contract by any chance? Because I assume that he won't be there next year. In that case, I would still be excited about Johnson moving forward, especially as Kyler Murray continues to grow. So this offense could become more explosive in years to come. So I would still definitely have interest in Johnson moving forward after this season.
Yeah, I believe Drake will be a free agent after the season. I think they traded a fairly late round draft pick for him, and I don't know if they have any real designs to extend him. I mean, maybe if they extend him, then it's a bit of an issue. I mean, I'm looking over David Johnson's game log here in the NFL Stat Explorer, and the last time he really sort of lived up to expectations here was back in week 6 against Atlanta, it seems, where he scored 28.2 PPR points, and he was like the third ranked RB out. Like, he's been, I mean, he seems like he's just dealing with a handful of injuries, and I wonder if, like, I wonder if he's ever going to be the same guy this season. I mean, even though Arizona has their bye in a couple of weeks, again, I don't know how you can reliably start David Johnson next week against San Francisco, and now that I've said that, he's just going to go absolutely ham. So I'm just going to try to be overweight in GPPs, but I mean, you know, his troubles really seem to have quote unquote started in that Giants game where he had the one carry, then he just exited. And I think next season, again, if, like you said, if they don't really draft another running back, or they don't really bring in someone, you know, in free agency, and it's still just David Johnson and Chase Edmonds, I personally see his value remaining fairly high when best ball leagues open up, and should remain, you know, maybe not as high as like the 105 as it was this offseason, but still at that 1-2 turn, I think is where he's going to settle in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the top running backs right now, just like shooting from the hip right now. He's probably at least a top 10 back next year if Drake does walk.
Yeah, well, the reason I ask is, I mean, we've seen him now have basically two down years after missing almost a whole season with injury. He's going to be turning 28 in December. You know, it's possible he's just not the same running back he was in like 2016. So I'm wondering, I guess, if there's enough risk there that you guys would think about avoiding him next season or something like that.
No, I don't really see myself avoiding him as much. I wonder if it's just a full off season would do him some good, yeah.
Maybe,
but that's—I mean, I'd say that's difficult to speculate sitting here.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he's dealing with back issues and a whole bunch of other items, so you never know. And also depends on how ADP shakes out, right?
Right. Well, that's the thing. I'm thinking if he is going to be a first-round pick next year, I mean, after the seasons he's had, you know, I might be avoiding him at that price. So I'm wondering how low he'd have to go in drafts next season for me to think he was a good pick. I've probably been burned by him too. You know, 2 years in a row, I've taken him ahead of ADP, and it hasn't worked out. So I might be a little bit bitter.
Brian Hill rushed 20 times for 61 yards in the Falcons' Week 10 win over the Saints, and he added one reception for 10 additional yards and a touchdown. Michael, Devonta Freeman, he was running fairly well, but was forced to exit the game due to a foot injury early in the third quarter. Do you think the Falcons make Hill their locked-in three-down bell cow in the event that Freeman, you know, is missing some time? And what are your expectations for Hill the rest of the season if that's what goes on?
Yeah, I think I saw Freeman's injury was an ankle injury, but I don't really know how serious it is. So I guess this question, though, is going under the assumption that Freeman does miss time. And in that case, I guess we do have to be excited about Brian Hill for zero running back teams. Because, I mean, at this point, we have to admit that our Justice Hill, Darwin Thompson, Darrell Henderson teams, they're all dead. So Brian Hill would be a priority waiver wire add, assuming Freeman does miss time. I saw he did have 20 carries and 2 targets. And while this was, you know, the ideal game script being ahead the entire game, the only other running back to record a carry besides him was Kenyon Barner, and he had just one touch. So I do see the Falcons go on the road to Carolina next week, which isn't the best spot, but, I mean, you can't really be too greedy if you're running back desperate. And this, let's not forget that this would be so perfect, him going on Davis Maddox podcast and then becoming fantasy irrelevant would be would be great.
Yeah, friend of the show, Davis Maddox, shout out to him. Also, when we had him on, we recorded a show titled Damon Williams is Actually Good, and Damon Williams did pretty well today. So here's to hoping that that our preseason take comes through, because man, I bought in on Damian pretty nicely after that.
We had a lot of shows pumping up Brian Hill too, so it's good to see him getting this work, even if it did have to come at Freeman's expense. I mean, one thing I was encouraged about was actually the two targets he got in this game, especially the one he ended up catching for a touchdown. So it was good to see them use him in that phase of the game and for him to be pretty effective doing that. So that's something that I'm hoping we'll see more of if he does end up being at least a fill-in lead back for this team.
Yeah, I mean, look, on the other hand, if there's someone who they need to like actually fill in carries, it should be Calvin Ridley. He had one carry for 19 yards, and he saw five targets, the same number as Russell Gage. What is going on here? I mean, like, I bought in pretty nicely on Calvin Ridley, especially considering, you know, we expected him to take a step forward. Michael, what's going on here with the target share in Atlanta? Like, why is Christian Blake? Well, first, what is Christian Blake? Who is he? And why is he getting two targets? And what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I can confidently say I never heard of Christian Blake until you just said his name. I didn't know who Russell Gage was until a few weeks ago. Yeah, it seems like this target share is just pretty distributed and they're willing to work in a couple of guys. I definitely did buy into the Ridley hype from RotoViz this offseason. Yeah, it's hard to really reliably project Ridley for more than six targets in any game, I guess, at this point. So you kind of just have to hope that they're in shootouts moving forward.
Yeah, it's weird. Ridley, I mean, I think part of the problem is we expected like a huge secondary breakout from him, but we're not seeing it. I mean, in terms of like per game, he's actually been a little bit better than last year. So he's improved, but just not as much as we were all hoping. So I wonder if it's sort of, you know, like if you're starting Calvin Ridley and he gets you, you know, 10, 11, 14 points, I mean, that's okay. That doesn't kill you. But yeah, I don't know. He's tough. I think you still have to keep him in your lineup. Because we know he can sometimes have these blow-up games, although he hasn't really had one this year. But yeah, it's I think maybe sort of reframing our expectations, and it's partly disappointment just based on the expectations we had coming in.
Really, the one thing that's been fascinating is just how frequently they target Austin Hooper. I think that's been, I mean, again, it's not to say that Austin Hooper isn't good. He absolutely is good, but they're like almost funneling. Earlier, they were like kind of funneling the offense through him. You know, he's pretty much a wide receiver level target share, and he routinely went in like the late eighth, early ninth round. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might be the PPR wide receiver one on the season.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah,
it's just one of those, like, when you're really, and you've got Julio who takes up a bunch of targets. What's interesting is that they are, with Dirk Cutter backing down, back to throwing to the running backs, with the thing that they didn't do over the last, what, two seasons when after Shanny left? So that's one of the, I mean, you're losing, like, I mean, like that, like, Freeman had eight targets last week, I believe, and he had four today before exiting. So it's just one of those. It was just not done with their previous OC, whose name I'm forgetting right now. Apologies for that. But
Sarkisian.
With this, Sarkisian, thank you. Yeah. So I think that's really where one of the items that I don't think we really accounted for enough was the little bit of Austin Hooper, but also the fact that they're going to slough off a chunk of receiving work to the running backs again.
Right. Also, I'm looking at his red zone target share. It's only 7%. He's only seen four red zone opportunities this year, so that definitely hurts his touchdown expectation with Hooper and Jones and the running backs all seeing more red zone work than he is.
Humans have been shaving for thousands of years, and the secret to a great shave, it hasn't changed much. You don't need to overpay for razors that include flex balls and heated handles. That's why I shop with Harry's razors. They don't overcharge you to add gimmicky features to their razors that focus on what actually matters. Sharp, durable blades at a fair price. Harry's is a return to the essential quality. Durable blades at a fair price, just $2 a blade. And best of all, it's super convenient. Blade refills are delivered directly to your door and on your schedule, with or without a subscription. And there's no risk to you for trying them out. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Personally, I love Harry's because it gives me a close shave with an easy glide at a low price. And listeners of the show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/bluewire. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. So go to harrys.com/bluewire to start shaving better today. Talking about erectile dysfunction, well, it isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. You know, we avoid it altogether with excuses like, well, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and it's best of all, it's totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, it's simple, and it's discreet. Getting started it's really easy. Just go to roman.com/bluewire and complete an online visit. You know, erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, and now there's Roman. So, you know, if you complete an online visit today and connect with a doctor, you can take care of it. So just go to roman.com/bluewire and get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/bluewire. Now let's get into No Shit Shit Now.
All right, first item. Eric Ebron caught 5 of 12 targets for 56 yards in the Colts Week 10 loss to the Dolphins.
I'm going to go with a shit no on this one. The Colts had elevated passing volume since they were losing the entire game, despite playing the Dolphins. I'd imagine when Brissett returns, Ebron's volume will also fall back closer to his 4 targets per game average. And then when T.Y. Hilton also returns, that'll only hurt his opportunity share.
O.J. Howard got 4 of 7 targets for 47 yards and a touchdown in the Bucs' Week 10 win over the Cards.
Maybe I was just burned by him and his early ADP earlier this offseason, but I can't really trust O.J. Howard until I see him do it again in a non-flow chart matchup. If you're in need of a tight end, I would be fine picking up O.J. Howard off the waiver wire. However, I'd try to not start him again for at least another week. But if he does see another 6+ targets in the game, then I'd definitely be open to starting Howard considering how bad the tight end landscape is. So it was encouraging to see him get the targets in this concentrated target share. But I need to see it again before I even consider starting him.
Yeah, can we talk about somebody who out-targeted O.J. Howard today, actually? And that was Ronald Jones. I mean, is he the overall running back 1 rest of the season?
I'm sure Pete Overzet and Pat Crane right now are still celebrating right now after that huge win.
Yeah, I'm kind of heartened. What really was frustrating was watching Jones lose some of that red zone work to Barber, and some of the receiving work yet again to Dare Ogunbowale. But I mean, come on, 8 targets, 8 catches, 77 yards. Maybe could have used a touchdown, but whatever.
And people said he couldn't catch coming out of college.
It's a wild one. Tariq Cohen compiled 14 yards and 3 carries along with 4 catches for 23 yards and a touchdown as a receiver Sunday in the Bears' Week 10 win over the Lions.
This is shit no for me. I can't really imagine starting Tariq Cohen in any fantasy format. I don't think he's topped 50 yards in any game this season. However, I guess this is a better time for us to at least discuss David Montgomery, who was chalk at 70% in FanDuel cash and 40% in GPPs this weekend. I fortunately did not have him in cash, but what that meant was I played Saquon and Jalen Samuels, who both managed to score below Montgomery. So that wasn't great, but at least I didn't play Montgomery.
Yeah, good job on avoiding. I guess I played Montgomery in cash, and man, was I tilting. I mean, I'm still tilting. And then the Chicago offense was really bad the first half. I think they had 33 yards the entire first half, And then I don't know what's going on there. And we've already talked a little bit about this, but everyone is tilting in that, like in the Chicago organization. And I don't know what's going on last, like whatever role they've had. And we talked about this again, but Tyler Lochner, they've just decided to marginalize Tariq Cohen. Receiver, they decided that the best way to use him is once in a while, run him up the gut. Your smallest guy, just to run him up the gut. That's just being a true visionary we got here in our hands with Matt Nagy. And again, it doesn't help that Mitch Trubisky isn't doing well, but he's just not doing the things that he did last year at all. So it's good to see. I mean, I guess in the broader sense, it's good to see that this offense was able to right the ship a little bit. And again, even when the script was kind of positive, Montgomery really didn't do all that much. Michael, like, according to our fantasy streaming app here for running backs, Chicago's got the third easiest schedule. Like, after this week, they've got the Rams, the Giants, you know, Detroit again, and Green Bay and KC in the playoffs. Like, how confident are you just plugging in Montgomery in your lineups or even playing him again in DFS?
I'm actually very willing to go back to Montgomery. This is his third game in a row with 17-plus touches. He's going to be, you know, relatively cheap again on FanDuel at least. I'd be willing to try to buy low on him in season-long leagues and kind of value him as a probably like a high-ish end RB2. So, yeah, I think he's a buy at this point because of his workload.
J.D. McKissic contributed 36 yards on 10 carries, along with 6 catches for 19 yards on 7 targets Sunday in the Lions' Week 10 loss to Chicago.
Shit, no. The Lions' backfield is a mess. I want nothing to do with it, especially as a three-way committee between McKissic, Ty Johnson, and Paul Perkins. I just don't want anything to do with this.
Damien Williams rushed 19 times for 17 yards, and he added 5 catches for another 30 yards in Kansas City's Week 10 loss to the Titans.
No shit. Once when you condense a backfield's touches, the RB1 becomes a much stronger play. Once when McCoy was a healthy scratch, I actually got a lot more confident in not only Williams, but the entire Chiefs passing offense as a whole, because once McCoy was ruled out, I thought, one, it showed the Chiefs were confident in Mahomes' health, and two, it would shift the Chiefs' touchdown ratio towards the pass. So I put a lot more Mahomes and Tyreek in my lineups, and Kelsey was obviously already a lock before that. But going back to the running backs, I think Williams is now back to being like a running back 2 rather than a risky running back 3 if his role is a lot more limited moving forward, or if he's a healthy scratch again.
Darius Slayton caught 10 of 14 targets for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns week 10 against the Jets.
Shit, no. He had the benefit of Evan Ingram and Sterling Shepard both not playing. The Giants go on bye next week, so I actually think that it's fair for Slayton to remain on the waiver wire in normal 12-team leagues.
Alvin Kamara rushed 4 times for 24 yards in the Saints' Week 10 loss to the Falcons, and he added 8 catches for 50 additional yards.
This is an interesting one because it makes sense that Kamara only saw 4 carries in a negative game script when the team only had 9 total running back carries. And Kamara did see 10 targets, and that's really what you want him to be seeing. So you can't really complain too much about that. It's hard to really read too much into the Latavius and Kamara split since the game was so pass heavy. But I do think that this backfield seems to be closer to a 60-40 split. And that also makes sense because I'd imagine Sean Payton wants to limit Kamara's touches a bit so he's healthy for the playoffs.
Saquon Barkley rushed 13 times for 1 yard and caught 5 passes for 30 yards in week 10 against the Jets.
Yeah, this one stings a lot because, as I already mentioned, I played a lot of Saquon on FanDuel. And we didn't even get the benefit of like the Leonard Fournette game where he goes 15 carries for like minus 3 total yards, but then he has like 1 70-yard carry for a touchdown. So this performance also is somewhat concerning since Saquon only saw 2 first-half targets. Saquon's obviously a high-end running back 1 rest of season because he does have one of the highest weekly touch projections, but this performance also does show that rostering a bad a player on a bad offense always carries a low floor no matter how talented the player is.
Derrick Henry handled 23 carries for 188 yards and 2 scores in Tennessee's Week 10 win over the Chiefs.
I'm actually going to go with no shit on this one. I think Blair and Hassan might disagree with me here, since you guys probably hate Henry's profile as a run-dependent player. But I'm one of the few RotoViz closet Henry truthers remaining. Henry certainly ran hot for someone projected to be in negative game script. However, he's eighth among running backs in opportunities per game before this game. And he had the seventh highest red zone opportunity share. So in terms of DFS, at least, I think Henry's always a great tournament play whenever he's low owned. And he was below 10% this week. And then he's just always a good fade whenever he's highly owned, considering his lack of passing involvement.
Yeah, and I guess my better guess on this one, really, part of the reason is that, you know, with six teams on bye, I think Henry made like a pretty naturalish pivot, if only because there's six teams on, you know, there's just not a lot going on there. But as far as like, you know, Henry here goes, like, what was the actual median expectation before we came into like the game? This is the Titans versus the Chiefs. Like this could have, like, game flow was kind of fortunate that, like, you know, that the Chiefs were able to keep it. Well, the Titans were able to keep it close, considering they were, man, that just the Titans themselves were just a very frustrating offense to have followed. And I don't know why I keep doing this to myself, just following them. But, you know, here we are. What's really fascinating to me is that Derrick Henry does manage to just, like you said, man, he smashes in these bizarro scripts. That's what's like really frustrating. And again, like I wasn't on him in GPP. I didn't play any GPP this week, just for the record. Like, it was really fascinating to see him make hay against this team. I mean, and at this point, it's just safe to say that the team has seen, and Dion Lewis was actually getting work last week, which I thought was interesting. But this week, there was just no Dion Lewis. I think it's pretty much the Derrick Henry show going forward for the rest of the season.
I know, Hassan, you and I were both tilting our faces off because we both played A.J. Brown in FanDuel Cash. So that didn't go well either.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's great. You're just going to give A.J. Brown. I mean, he caught one of his four targets. And, Anthony Firkser saw four targets. Like, what is going on here? Like Jonnu Smith saw six. It was probably, you know, a solid play. But, like, the good thing was that you pointed this one out. They just lost the time of possession battle, like, poorly. And, again, like, because they were able to keep it close with the Chiefs, it was the only way. I mean, like, it was the only way they could have won, right? Like, and that's kind of how the Titans won. They won in that last second blocked field goal. But really, like, credit to Vrabel and company for figuring out the best way to beat the Chiefs is to just take the air out of the football and inject this high variance outcome into the game. Because the Chiefs, we've seen them lose before like that to the Colts earlier this year. And right.
You guys, we were talking on Slack during this game, and we saw that the Titans had five first quarter offensive plays or something really low like that.
Yeah, they were just not in it.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that this is the kind of game Tennessee wants to play against everyone, probably. So it's natural for them to come out and try to run the ball. And we've seen this work against Kansas City. So in a way, the game script almost kind of makes sense from that perspective. If you're trying to think of a way to beat Kansas City, you want to do it by keeping the ball out of Mahomes' hand, keep the clock moving. So from that perspective, you can almost see Henry being a natural play. I think, like you said, he makes a good tournament play because you're banking on these long touchdowns, which he got today and which he has kind of a knack for doing, but his floor is always going to be pretty low since he doesn't get that passing game work.
Right. He's such a good tournament play because whenever he hits, he like hits really hard, but you're just never going to play him in cash because he has, you know, 15 carries for 50 yard downside.
Yeah. Aaron Jones carried the ball 13 times for 93 yards and 3 touchdowns today. That one's not all there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say no shit on this one because Aaron Jones was eighth among running backs in expected points per game. However, As I'm sure I'm going to tweet out again later this week, as I always do with my touchdown regression threads. But Jones is going to be due for massive negative touchdown regression. I think he's leading the league in touchdowns now, actually. And he's also in a running back by committee. And Jamal Williams definitely gets carries around the goal line. So I do expect his touchdowns to regress moving forward. And he will probably be a good fade candidate next week in DFS, assuming he's chalk after another three touchdown game. And he and Williams actually had an even split 13 to 13 carries, and Jones didn't even see a target today. So I wouldn't mind trying to sell Aaron Jones high. But again, running backs are just so valuable that whenever you have a running back one, it's hard to really get fair compensation for him, but I would be willing to listen to trade offers since he is in a running back by committee.
Yeah, not a bad time to probably look for a trade anyway. I think they're on bye next week, and then they face San Francisco after that. So good time to get, maybe move on from Jones.
Yeah, I did like your point, though, because this is a true 50-50 split. It's just, like, I mean, Aaron Jones made a lot happen as well. But, yeah, I mean, you know, 7.2 yards per carry, it's, you know, is performing well above expectations considering Jamal Williams also did fairly well against expectations, but not Aaron Jones good. It's clear that Matt LaFleur and company just want this to be like a 50-50 timeshare. And again, you know, given that the Packers have dreams of making it to the playoffs and probably looking to rotate back just as a way to reduce injury risk going forward. I mean, they're now 8-2, so I can see why they'd, you know, I can see that happening. And just like you mentioned, just this like split continuing. I mean, Jamal Williams was one of those stealth zero RB candidates that was just, you should just be taking when he was like dirt cheap in like the 15th-ish round. Well, I guess maybe his price climbed a little bit, right? But like in the later round of drafts, just because he's had a handful of spike weeks, but he's been pretty useful for us in a couple of leagues, right, Blair?
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's right. In our FFPC football guys league, I think we finally found a running back two that scores more than 1 point. So he's definitely been useful.
We also have Breda and we have Ronald Jones. So the stars are all here, my friend.
That's right. Zero RB is working out at this time of year.
Well, speaking of, here's a guy who went in an early ADP, but Joe Mixon rushed 30 times for 144 yards, and he caught two passes for 37 yards in the Bengals' week 10 loss to the Ravens.
I'm going to go with the shit now on this one. Mixon is a draft day bust, and at this point, he's just a flex play. I don't really want anything to do with this offense other than except maybe like Tyler Boyd.
All right, before we get into the last two news items, I want to take a moment to remind you to become a RotoViz Patreon and gain exclusive access to RotoViz Radio Slack, where you can ask questions and gain league-winning advice from many of the podcast and writing team. Patronships start at just $6 a month. Become a RotoViz Radio patron today to join an exclusive community of listeners. Sign up at patreon.com/rotovizradio. You can also get a listeners only 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all our premium NFL content, and it supports the pod. Plus, we are also offering a 2-year RotoViz Radio NFL sub, which includes a 10% discount and complimentary access to RotoViz Radio Patreon and the RotoViz Radio Slack channel for the 2019 season. That's right, get 10% off a 2-year subscription. Enjoy unlimited access to the RotoViz Slack channel throughout the rest of the 2019 season, just in time for a playoff push. All you have to do is head to rotoviz.com/podcast, sign up via the 2-year RV radio subscription, and we'll email you Slack access details within 48 hours. Once again, that's rotoviz.com/podcast. All right, moving on to news item number 3. Kareem Hunt caught 7 of 9 targets for 44 yards in the Browns' Week 10 win over the Bills, adding 4 carries for 30 additional yards. So Michael Hunt seemed to be a large part of the Browns' game plan in his debut. His 9 targets were behind only Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. He did seem to be deployed in more of a change of pace role as Nick Chubb carried the ball 20 times and caught 2 of his 4 targets for 5 yards. So how do you see this backfield split working out going forward?
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. I was in the camp that Kareem Hunt would be more of like that Dontrell Hilliard kind of role rather than being a true part of the game plan. However, it does appear that Hunt was really deployed as a receiver in this game. I still do think that Chubb is the 1A in this backfield, and he's a running back one moving forward still. But it's certainly encouraging for Hunt. And with Cleveland having such condensed opportunity share, Hunt might be become a flex viable moving forward, especially with Cleveland drawing Miami, Cincinnati, and Arizona in three of their next five games. It seems that Hunt might be taking the role of like the wide receiver three or tight end in this target order. What do you guys think?
Well, my if you guys can hear a little bit of the growling, that's my dog back there. She is not taking. That's actually her agreeing with that take. She's also agreeing with the condensed target share here. I mean, when you're looking at it, Demetrius Harris had the two targets, Rashard Higgins had the one, and Nick Chubb, he had four, but he didn't really do all that much. So, I mean, realistically, and I'm really hoping this is the case going forward, is that we can actually narrow down the target tree, because it makes these guys very exciting for, well, not going down the stretch, especially because you mentioned they face a fairly soft schedule. But, you know, I mean, again, this is a team that's a potent offense that we're hoping to take off. And I think that it should, because more importantly, this is a team that, you know, all offseason bought into their own hype, and they're not doing particularly well faced with these challenges. So I'm hoping they just sort of uncork and let loose on pretty much every other poor team out there that's just not able to fight back. It makes them fairly intriguing. I mean, a lot of these like players, it makes Landry and Odell Beckham fairly intriguing, especially for DFS as locked in wide receiver plays. And Kareem Hunt, did you either of you guys play him in GPPs today?
No.
No way.
Oh, that's too bad. I mean, he was probably a better player in DraftKings, where he was priced at the Stone Min, 3K. Mm-hmm. But that would have been such a strong GPP play.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's not like Cleveland was great in this game, but you at least saw Landry have a good game, and I mean, Mayfield wasn't terrible the way he's looked in a few games this season. So I wonder if just having that other weapon on the field in, you know, having Hunt on the field to sort of, I don't know, draw coverage from the defense, I wonder if that makes a big difference in the way this offense functions going forward. You know, we at least saw it an improved game from Landry. So I think there's some hope that that might actually be the case. Yeah, I mean, we didn't, like I think you said, we didn't see Hunt really stealing targets from Chubb in this game, but do you think that this is likely to continue with Chubb and Hunt still, you know, between them seeing 10 plus targets?
I mean, I don't think we can expect Hunt to be seeing, you know, 9 targets in a game, but it certainly seems like the Browns are fine having them be a big involvement in their passing game.
Robert Woods got 7 of 11 targets for 95 yards in the Rams' week 10 loss to the Steelers. Michael, this was Woods' best game since week 4, which is quite impressive considering how poor Jared Goff looked during the game. Do you think Woods will continue to see a high target share once Brandon Cooks returns to the lineup? And what are your expectations for the Rams' aerial offense for the rest of the season?
Yeah, my main takeaway from this performance really is how valuable it is to have condensed target share. I'll get back to Woods in a second, but we saw that Sean Siegel's boy, Gerald Everett, once again popped up for another monster target game, which I'm very happy about since he's my highest owned tight end in best ball. But yeah, I think that this continues to show that we should just fade Jared Goff and the Rams whenever the Rams are expected to be faced with a lot of pressure. He seems to just collapse whenever he faces an aggressive defense. And another thing is, it's really, really sad to see someone as talented as Cooper Kupp just retire in the middle of a season like this.
Yeah. Are you at all worried about him going forward? I mean, he only had 4 targets. Is this just something sort of more of Goff being really bad against pressure, or is it worrying for Kupp owners?
I mean, it's certainly not a good thing. I would say that Kupp was probably overvalued considering his start to the season, but I wouldn't say I'm panicking yet about him.
So I was just looking over here at our strength of schedule app on RotoViz, and they face Chicago next week and then Baltimore. And so that's a couple of tricky weeks. Then you get Arizona, then Seattle, Dallas, and then the fantasy playoffs is going to be San Francisco, who, you know, as we've determined, are a pretty tough team, provided their defense stays healthy. I mean, how often do you think we're going to see, you know, not just road Goff, but also pressure Goff, you know, like the Jared Goff under pressure? And I mean, although somehow Robert Woods decided to unretire for this game, like, you know, I mean, it does feel like he is more of the odd man out, right? Like relative to Kupp.
Yeah, I guess I would still feel more confident in Kupp moving forward ahead of Woods. I mean, I'm looking at Kupp on the Stat Explorer right now. He's had 15 plus expected points in every game but one before this game. So it still seems like Kupp, you know, is a wide receiver one moving forward. But again, we just have to be aware of whenever Goff is expected to face pressure. But I would still be confident in Kupp moving forward. It just still shows how volatile wide receivers are, no matter like how good they are going into a game.
The one nice thing about the schedule you brought up, Hassan, is that they're all, with the exception of San Francisco and I guess Dallas in week 15, they're all positive matchups for the tight end position. So I think definitely keep plugging in Gerald Everett if you got him. Would you be looking to acquire him? And if so, what would you be willing to pay for him, either of you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that considering the state of the tight end position, I would definitely be willing to acquire him. I don't think I would give up much, though, just because I don't think you need to. I think a lot of people, like the public in the fantasy football community, probably doesn't think highly of Everett. So I think you could get him on the cheap.
I'm with you. I'm actually kind of bummed because in a tight end Premier League, our football guys, like we drafted Everett, then we dropped him because we were fairly impatient. And again, like that shows you where everyone sort of values him relative to expectations. It does feel like Everett has taken over that role off the outlet receiver, kind of what, you know, the same way the tight end is the outlet receiver in Houston. Congrats on your breakout season, Darren Fells. Enjoy your bye week. But I mean, with Everett here, like what's really fascinating, again, like you mentioned, like the public definitely doesn't value him. And I'm sure the guy who owns him way overvalues him. Like, it's just like they're going to be wanting like an actual like Jameson Crowder probably would be what I'd be willing to pay, especially because of how important that the tight end position is. And I guarantee they'd be looking for something as like a more valuable player than Jameson Crowder. They'd probably be looking for, like, honestly, a Woods, like-ish level. Yeah, like, I can see that. Or, like, maybe even a DK Metcalf or something to that extent. Like, I'm not too certain on like, what that valuation would be on a tight end. But I'm, I will admit freely, tight end is just a position I am just very bad at evaluating. Like, I wound up just fading a handful of, like, mid tight end busts because I was just like, who drafts a tight end this high? And then I whiffed on all my later round tight ends in best ball anyway. So
speaking of tight end, sorry, go ahead, Blair.
Oh no, I was just gonna say what I'm kind of thinking is maybe what would work is if you're strong at tight end already, but maybe weak at another position, like if you have someone like, I don't know, like Kittle or something, you could maybe trade him to the Everett owner and upgrade at a different position. I don't know. That's kind of how I'm viewing the possibility of acquiring Everett, like almost as a throw in to a larger trade.
Yeah, and Kittle's a tricky one to throw out there because he is truly doubtful for tomorrow's game,
well,
right?
Right. Kittle's not the best example, maybe, but yeah. Ertz. What are your thoughts on that one, Michael?
I was looking at FanDuel, just came out with their prices for next week, and we better hope that Kittle gets healthy because he gets the flowchart Cardinals matchup next week.
All right, so do the trade I said after next week.
But, you know, again, and just wanted to point out a quick interesting note from today's Steelers. This running back is my internet's going a little slowly. Yes, Tony Brooks James.
Yeah, I've never heard of him in my life. He had like 5 carries, didn't he?
6.
Yeah.
Like, who is this guy? So Terrell Henderson had 4 carries and he gained 4 yards on them. What's really weird is that Henderson isn't getting used at all as a receiver. And then Malcolm Brown had 5 carries and he had 10 yards. Gurley looked pretty solid, but like, you know, out of curiosity, like, where do you think this, this running back core is going? I mean, because I know you mentioned earlier you think Henderson is dead, but do you think there's any hope for him going like that, like down the pike, or just wash it off and try and buy him cheap next year?
I guess I still have some hope in Henderson, but I mean, you can't at all consider starting him unless Gurley misses time, which I mean, as we do get into the later weeks of the season, it's more and more likely that Gurley would re-aggravate his knee injury. So I guess there is still some hope and he's worth, keeping on rosters because he would be a guy that I'd be willing to blow my fab for if Gurley were to get hurt. So I guess I do still have some hope for him.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Special thanks to our guest, Michael Dubner. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @Michael_Dubner. Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz radio channel on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our Patreon. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast channel on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.